What we're dealing with here, littering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoke in the reef.
Called the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah.
No, that's not real.
This thing a weed.
Takes one solid weekend of training to get that bag.
Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome back to the show. I'm super excited to be sitting here talking to you now because for a couple weeks now, I haven't been able to record anything. Our mixer that runs the studio, as it were, completely stopped working. I updated our operating system on the computer that we use, and the mixer and the computer decided not to work together for a while. So I got it figured out. So we're back on the air. The Tumblr is about 40% gone, so if you want one, you need to go sign up at Patreon as soon as possible so you can get one of the first 50 limited edition Tumblrs. And of course, once we hit 50 members, I will do something crazy and or stupid at your request and film it, of course, so you can all see my pain. And of course, members get access to our early release episodes. We have three up there right now. The Secret Sauce is one that I will highlight. The Secret Sauce, How to Win in the Police Hiring Process with Deputy Chief Dan Filippo. Dan was one of those guests that just makes my job super easy. He was amazing, and he's an awesome dude, and had tons of just great nuggets of wisdom and advice from someone who is in charge of the hiring process for a good-sized agency in California. So it's an amazing episode. That one won't be out for at least a month still on the public version of the episode, but members have had access to it already for I can't even remember, at least probably about a month. So there is that. And that's it. I won't ramble on too much longer. We are now back up and running, and we'll be putting out more early release episodes and more content for members as soon as possible, and hope to see you all there. Just go to Patreon, patreon.com, and check it out. Without further ado, my thoughts on George Floyd. All right, so I'm going to try to do this one without shutting things down, re-recording, making cuts, because I want this to be very natural and honest and just, you know, a conversation, right? Me and you talking. Well, mostly me, because that would be weird if you're talking back, but you can. No one will notice. But I want to talk about George Floyd today. If you don't know who that is, you don't recognize that name, you very likely will. The situation is going to be a headliner for many in the media for a long time. A lot of that is for the wrong reasons. People are looking for something to support the narrative that they want to push. On the other hand, this is a terrible situation and should not have happened. So let's talk about it real quick. I want to kind of run through the events in case you haven't watched this video. If you're squeamish, it's not extremely graphic. It's just if you know what happens, it's terrible to watch. I mean, this guy dies on video, basically, or it appears that way at least. So this happened in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Officers were called to deal with someone who was suspected of fraud and make contact with George Floyd and a couple of other passengers in this vehicle. There are videos from security footage from a store nearby. There's cell phone video. There's all kinds of video of this thing. And, you know, people are... No, let's talk about what happens first. So officers pull him out of the car. He appears to be handcuffed right as he gets out of the car. They set him down on the sidewalk. Everything looks fine at this point. The officer, who is dealing with him is being gentle. I don't see anything wrong with how the officer is handling him at first. And is not the same officer. It doesn't appear to be the same officer who will later have his knee in George Floyd's neck. So he sets him down on the sidewalk. The officer eventually gets him back up, and he does so in a safe manner. He grabs his upper arm to help him up without hurting his shoulder. Then as they start walking, the officer has one of his hands on George Floyd's hand while the other is up near his elbow, which is a safe and effective technique to move people who you're trying to control without causing any injury, but still allowing you to control them. So everything seems kosher at this point. There is a point right at the beginning where they start to walk, and Floyd like almost goes to the ground, like his knees or his legs give out. And that will become a theme once they get to the cruiser they take him to across the street. You can see from the security footage, by this point he's across the street from where the camera's at, but you can see as they get over by this other police cruiser, he does this same thing again where it's like his legs give out and he starts to go to the ground, and the officers are actually trying to keep him, you know, on his feet. And then another cruiser pulls in, you can't really see what's going on. The next video, at least as far as I have been able to find, is of him, you know, on the ground. The officers are on top of him. Again, he's been cuffed this whole time. So he's already handcuffed, his hands are behind his back, and you know, he's laying next to this police cruiser on his chest, kind of tilted to his right, and he's looking to his right. And the officer near his head has one knee on his neck, and the other knee appears to be kind of on his back. Now, the knee in the back, okay, to initially to hold somebody down to get control of them, I understand that. I've done that. Like that's part of controlling someone who doesn't want to go into handcuffs. The knee in the neck, I see no place for. Nowhere, as far as I'm aware, and I hope that nowhere in this country are any academies teaching officers to control a suspect by putting their knee on their neck. That is completely outside the norm, and I think most police officers, a significant majority of police officers, look at this and go, and are appalled by this, and quite frankly, are pissed off by this. Years and years ago, it was common knowledge that leaving someone that you have handcuffed on their chest on the ground could kill them. And that's been years. I mean, why would you think that holding someone down while they're handcuffed like this, even if that officer's knee wasn't in his neck, having that officer's weight on his chest would be dangerous? But he takes that another step further, or several, and has his knee in his neck. I don't know why you would hold someone in that position. Again, not only on his chest, but with your knee in his neck. There's no reason for that. And it doesn't seem like these officers are trying to get him anywhere else. They're just sitting on him. And he's telling them, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Please, someone, please help. I can't breathe. You know, he's clearly in distress. And the one officer will say at some point, you know, this is paraphrasing, but he'll say, he's talking, he can breathe, right? And he's talking to the people around who are starting to get worried about him and voicing their concerns. Like, well, you guys got him. You don't have to continue to hold him down with his face smashed into the cement and your knee in his neck. The people watching this are seeing that this something's not right here. And you know, when the officer said, well, he's talking so he can breathe, And I've heard officers say that. I don't remember, but I may have been guilty of saying that at some point. Because when you're dealing with people who are used to trying to weasel their way out of consequences for their actions, for example, they'll say anything. And they get very dramatic. Any cop knows what I'm talking about. So, yes, officers see this stuff all the time, and they know a lot of it's bogus. So that officer's comment, for me, isn't as disconcerting because I understand where he's coming from. Officers are used to people being dramatic and making a big deal of nothing. Now, in this case, obviously, he really was having trouble breathing, and we don't know exactly what the cause of death is here yet. Whether it's, you know, restricted blood flow or restricted airflow or some combination of the two, it's hard to say until they have an autopsy and all that stuff. But yeah, I know a lot of people will make a big deal of what that officer said. What I will make a big deal of is the officer who has his knee in his neck. That guy's kneeling there on him, with his hands at his sides, just hanging out. I don't even know. I don't know what the intent is there. At one point, an officer says, in response to a civilian saying, "Why don't you guys put him in a cruiser?" And the officer says, "We've been trying that for 10 minutes." So it sounds like he wasn't being cooperative, and he's a big guy. They're struggling to get him to do what they need him to do, which it by all appearances is get in the police car. I only say that to explain the context of what's going on. The goal of the officers here is to take into custody a suspect. I don't know if they were making an official arrest or if they were just trying to figure out what was going on still, but they need some cooperation. It is very difficult to get someone into a police car who doesn't want to go in that police car, especially if they are, you know, a big person. And it looks like he's a pretty big guy. That said, there is no excuse for pinning someone down by putting your knee in their neck like this. There is no excuse. And, you know, a lot of these videos that come out, like I said, when I first started this, we've done episodes on very hard topics. We did Ferguson, Michael Brown, and the result of that investigation, the Police Academy podcast investigation, was that Darren Wilson, the police officer involved, was being violently assaulted and was justified in using deadly force. And that went against the media narrative at that time. And the media narrative that will always exist because it was so powerful when it first came out. But we're going on the opposite end of that spectrum on this one. I mean, this is clear and blatant police brutality and malpractice. No question. What that officer is doing, there's no training that says that's okay. In fact, everything points toward the opposite. There's no reason for that. So that said, 100%, this was wrong. And it cost someone their lives. And that is tragic, regardless of who they are, where they come from, or what they did to find themselves in handcuffs. This clearly was not a deadly force situation. So the fact that the citizen who was arrested died is terrible. But of course, the narrative that many in the media in our society are looking for is that this was a white cop and a black unarmed man. And it's all about racism. Now, they could be right. They could be wrong. And what's the percentage there? What are the odds, right? What are the odds that this was racism, that that officer didn't care about this guy because he was black? Okay, so you have different levels, right? So you have the potential that this officer genuinely hates black people and use this as an opportunity to be excessively mean to a black person, right? Or even we'll go as far as was hoping that the guy would die. I don't know why you would, because you know your career is over at that point, but you know, was hoping that something bad was going to happen, or at least just wanted to cause as much pain and suffering as he could in the moment. What are the chances of that? And everyone's going to have a different answer because they see things from a different lens, right? Some people are screaming 100%, obviously it was racism. And to those people, I'd say, you're wrong to say that obviously it was racism, or that this officer was doing this because, you're wrong. Let me clarify. You're wrong to say that you are 100% sure. And this is where, I think we go wrong with incidents like this. We should call a spade a spade. This was wrong. It was police brutality. And yes, race may very well have had to do something with it, even if it was as simple and as slight as that this officer wasn't as concerned for George Floyd's health or safety than he would have been if it was a white guy and all the other circumstances were the same. And it wasn't a conscious thing, but just subconsciously, you know, he doesn't care to take as much care with Floyd, or with George Floyd, because he's black. That's a very real and in this very likely possibility. But I'm not going to impugn motive on somebody else, even this officer who I despise. I told my wife after I watched this, and we were talking about it earlier, and I said, I just want to kick that guy in the face. And when I say kick in the face, I mean Spartan kick the guy in the face. Like, break his jaw, and I'm not saying I would do that. Don't get me wrong. I'm just trying to convey how much this pisses me off. And like I said earlier, many officers who are listening to this right now are nodding right along and coming up with their own ideas as what they would do to this guy. Because this guy, this officer, is why it's fuel for this narrative that is not statistically supported. This narrative that police officers are out to get and kill black men solely based on racism, or that black men are more likely to be killed by police officers. Statistically, it is not true. But guys like this screw it up for the rest of our law enforcement community. And I point that out, especially my own personal anger towards this officer and my disdain for him as a human being at this point. Because even though this guy pisses me off and what he did was terrible, I am not going to assume his motive. We have due process because it is natural for us as human beings to assume someone's motive. And the problem with that is we all come to different conclusions based on our own perspectives, which have no basis in reality, in the reality of the situation at hand. Some people are going to look at this and go, it's not racism. The guy should have just cooperated. Some people, and I think that group is very small. Some people are going to go, okay, that's messed up. I don't know if it's racist, but it's messed up. And then some people are going to look at it and go, oh, here we go again. Those cops out there trying to kill black people. And it all depends on your perspective. It all depends on the reality you want to paint for yourself. The one that makes you feel the most comfortable. That goes along with this the mental framework that's been built throughout your life. And I don't want to play that game. It's very possible that this had to do, that his motive, that he was motivated or affected, influenced by the race of George Floyd. But I'm never going to be the guy to say, to point to that as a motive, unless there's hard evidence to suggest that that's the case. And I have to point out that police brutality and malpractice like this happens to everyone. You know, you can find plenty of videos of white people being abused by police officers unjustly and killed by police officers unjustly. It doesn't have the same headline. Now again, when we get into that conversation, you have to look at statistics, not just anecdotal evidence, not just video after video, right? Because incidents like this don't tell us what's going on as a whole. So I'm not using that as an example of, well, you know, more of a certain group find themselves in these situations. What I'm pointing out is that this is a reality, regardless of who you are, where you came from. In this case, yes, it was a white police officer and a black civilian, and it was a tragedy, and it should have never happened. Now, this officer who had his knee in George Floyd's neck, I think he is going to do some serious time in prison, and I hope he does, unless some new information comes out, and which I can't even, I say that because I'm always open to more evidence, right? More information. But I honestly can't imagine what could come out that would change my opinion on this. This officer needs to pay for what he did. I mean, he cost someone their life, and it never should have happened. That sounds revengeful or avengeful, whichever. But what I'm saying is justice needs to be done here. And I think justice involves this officer being convicted, and serving some serious time. Now, if we're talking about the other officers there, that becomes much more difficult. Because like I said, you deal with stuff like this all the time as an officer, people being dramatic, saying, I can't breathe, or this hurts or that hurts, or I think I'm dying, or whatever it is, right? And a lot of times it is just drama. The other officers, I know the one officer standing right there and he's telling the civilians, hey, listen, he's talking, so he's fine. He can breathe. The other officers on the scene have other priorities other than just controlling the suspect. They're making sure that the scene is controlled. And, you know, some of the officers are probably trying to figure out what's going on, trying to find witnesses, whatever. There's a lot going on in a scene like this. And the officer with his knee in George Floyd's neck knows what he is doing. The other officers don't necessarily know. Maybe they assume that he's not putting any pressure on his neck with that knee. Or, you know, some of the other officers may not have even known that his knee was in the guy's neck. Now, again, that one officer standing right there and doesn't say anything, even defends this officer. We have to understand how difficult it is in the moment to tell another officer, appear to do something differently, or basically tell them that they're wrong. That is just a human. We have an aversion to that, right? Because it's confrontational, and that's a guy you have to work with. I know that sounds petty when someone lost their life, but obviously that officer standing there didn't think George Floyd was dying, that he was actually suffocating, or was going to die as a result of this. I'm sure if you ask any of these officers, they would say, in hindsight, they would have done things differently. I mean, of course. But to hold the other officers, and this is really what I'm getting at. I feel like we've addressed the primary officer that appears to have directly caused George Floyd's death. We've addressed him. By all appearances, he should probably end up doing some serious time. The other officers is a whole different bag of worms. All I'm pointing out here is that the one officer who directly did this is very clear and simple, it seems. But to hold the other officers, to throw them into the paddy wagon altogether and treat them all the same would be unjust. And I just want to point that out, because just because they were there doesn't mean that they have the same level of culpability or same level of responsibility for what happened to George Floyd. Yes, the one officer standing there could have, and in hindsight, definitely should have said, "Hey man, get off of his neck." Yes, they probably should have tried to get him off the ground and at least into a position, even if it's sitting up, but at least off of his chest. Because like I said, we know that people can literally die. They can asphyxiate while they're cuffed on their chest like that, let alone having somebody on their back. Yes to all these things. But I got to say no if we're talking about even the officer who caused it having race or racism as his motive. We can talk about that, and it maybe that wasn't clear. I'm down to have that conversation, but I'm having it from the perspective, the logical and reason-based perspective and fair perspective, that we can't assume someone's motive. And I think that while many people who do assume motive and take the convenient and comfortable and easy way out when addressing situations like this, just situations in life, right? Many of them are attempting to do a good thing. They're trying to fight something that a perceived evil, right? Police brutality or pervasive racism in the law enforcement community, whatever that is. They're trying to do a good thing. But in turn, because they do assume motive, they hurt many more people than they help. And that's why I won't play that game. And I encourage you all, and most of my listeners understand this, not to play that game either. If you find yourself rushing to judgment on a video like this, definitely slow down and ask yourself, play devil's advocate a little bit. Ask yourself if you have all the information you need to know what happened for sure. And even if you say yes, do you have enough to know why it happened? What motivated the human beings, who are extremely complex and nuanced and just outright confusing, what motivated them to do what they did? 9 times out of 10, probably a heck of a lot more than that. The answer to that second question, the answer to, do I know the what was going on in that person's head, is going to be no. Because unless they flat out say, you know, why they're doing something, we're probably never going to know. And I don't think it's fair to the Black members of our society, of our community, to create a narrative that isn't true for political gains, whatever motive that you have to push that narrative, if it's not true. Because then people are living in fear of a thing that doesn't actually exist. And we know that part of deadly force encounters, or many deadly force encounters, begin with someone being fearful and uncooperative with the police. And when you push this a narrative without actual data to back it up, with anecdotal evidence that you cherry pick, right? Which is what happens in these cases. And you impugn a motive and say, well, this had to be racism. Obviously, this is racism, all this stuff. When you build that narrative, you're hurting the same people who you say you're trying to help. And I think many people honestly are trying to help. But I think there's plenty of people who know what they're doing, who know that this is a way to gain power and influence and fame, right? And they play on people's fears. And the willingness of our culture and our society and the media, especially, to go along with that particular narrative. And as we kind of round out this episode, I find it a bit odd, kind of have a strange feeling, because it's putting me back into the days of Ferguson and Baton Rouge and Dallas, you know, when we had cities on fire, we had cruisers burning in the streets because things got turned up so hot. And I hope we're not headed there. I hope that we continue to improve our police officers' training and reduce incidents like this. But I'm never going to be the one as naive to say we must make sure this never happens again. Because human beings will always find a way to screw it up. And there are completely messed up and terrible people out there. And some of them, unfortunately, are wearing uniform, are wearing a badge. They are few and far between, but they're there. So I'm never going to be that guy. I'm never going to be like, oh, we got to make sure this never happens again. Listen, we need to make sure that we do everything we can to give our officers the right training, guidance, and give them a culture in their department. If you listen to the series we did on Chicago Police Department, the culture that they had built for themselves for decades and decades and decades was one of the primary problems with that department, and may still be. I don't know. I haven't followed up on that for quite some time. But I'm going to round this one out right now before we get into another rabbit hole. And rounding it out, I'll just say this was a tragedy. It should never have happened. We have to do better. And the law enforcement community wants to do better and is striving to do better. And I think the best we can do is support our law enforcement agencies in giving them what they need to succeed, to get better training, to get rid of officers, because that's an expensive process, who are a bad influence on their peers and subordinates, and build a culture that is for the people that they serve. All right, that's a wrap for this one. Ladies and gents, thank you so much for tuning in. If you are pissed off at me or pissed off because of this episode, please, before you write a very long email about why I can't possibly be correct in my opinion on this, you might want to listen to it again. Because if you fixate on one thing that ticks you off and don't listen after that, which happens, I get the emails, people. I get them. Where people are mad at me because I said a thing that I said wasn't a thing, clearly, in the episode, and they just weren't listening. These are few and far between, but they happen. So if that's you, just make sure that you're sure that I'm an idiot before you write that email. And of course, don't forget to go check out Patreon. Our membership is live, and we've got more content on the way for our members. And to those members, I apologize for the radio silence lately because things have been crazy in general with my schedule, and our studio has been down. So double whammy. We'll get stuff going here again very soon. And don't forget, as members, you guys, you know, I talk to you guys on Discord all the time on a daily basis. Throw up some suggestions for content that you want, videos, podcasts, whatever it is. And I will do my best to make it happen because that's what the membership is about. It's about connecting you to me and you to each other and making sure you're getting what you want out of Police Academy Podcast. So make sure you do that. If you're not a member, go over to Patreon, patreon.com, and check it out. We have 3 membership levels and they're all super awesome. All right, we'll see you all next time. As always, do good, be strong, fear nothing.